Hello again, and welcome to another NABBW teleseminar on a topic of huge interest to Boomer women and their families, life insurance. Tonight, our goal is to help Boomer women get wise about life insurance. My name is Ann Holmes, and I am your moderator and the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, an organization dedicated to educating and empowering women at midlife. This call, like those we do every month, is one of the ways we serve our membership. In a moment, I will introduce our guest expert, Pamela J. Sams, CRPC, a chartered retirement planning counselor and NABBW's retirement planning associate, so that we can start talking on our topic of the night, Boomer Women, Time to Get Wise About Life Insurance. I somehow wanted to say CLU in there, Chartered Life, because of the life insurance topic, I think. So sorry for mangling your title there. But before we get launched into our topic, let me say a few words about how this call will proceed. For the next 45 minutes or so, the phone lines will be muted, and Pam and I will be discussing tonight's topic. Then I will open the lines for questions from our listening audience. If you have a question before the lines are open, use the box on your computer screen to type it in. I'll be able to see that and pass it on to Pam. Okay, now moving forward, as I said, our guest tonight is Pamela J. Sams, CRPC, and we're delighted that she's a frequent guest and always covers important information related to money and financial planning, which is something too many of us Boomer women don't know enough about. Pam Sams is NABBW's retirement planning associate and an expert in personal finance. She's spent the past dozen years helping women and their families improve their personal and financial wealth through solid financial planning. More importantly, Pam is president of Jackson Sams Financial Services, a financial planning and wealth management firm located in Herndon, Virginia, near the Dulles Corridor. There, she focuses on helping women understand the importance of financial and retirement planning by placing their needs first. Pam firmly believes sound investment management starts with understanding each woman's goals. In fact, she insists that before any investment decisions are made, her clients need to work through and create their own personal financial plan. A graduate of the University of Missouri Columbia, Pam holds an MBA in financial management from Everett University. She's earned several client service and financial planning awards and successfully earned her CRPC, Chartered Retirement Planning Counselor certification through the College of Financial Planning. In the past, Pam and I have talked about important topics such as long-term care and how couples are retirement challenged because they don't take time to sit down and really talk about their retirement goals and dreams. We've also discussed how boomers aren't doing a good job of financial planning, and especially with regard to the strategies they'll need to make retirement possible. As a result, Pam and I are very aware of two things. One, Americans are living longer, and two, as a group, we are not prepared to retire. That's why she and I hold one teleseminar each month on retirement planning topics. We're delighted that those of you who are listening have joined us for this free call. And now I ask you to help me welcome NABBW's own retirement planning associate, Pamela J. Sams.
Great. Thanks, and welcome once again, everyone. And thanks for having me once again, Ann. We've been wrapping up the summer and really getting back into these phone calls we did miss last month. But here once again to talk about something very timely, which is life insurance. Next month being Life Insurance Awareness Month, I think it's best that we really try to get a good understanding around life insurance. It's one of those cornerstones of financial planning that some people kind of skim through and really don't take a solid look at where they are financially in terms of life insurance. So hopefully we'll get a chance to have a really good discussion about life insurance, especially as it relates to women. Statistically, women are very underinsured. It's what we call a male-dominated sector in terms of life insurance. We always think of men having the most life insurance and women having less. The last statistic that I saw was 31%. I mean, the average female has a life insurance policy of about $130,000, which is about 31% less than the average male policy. And, you know, I think that may be because women aren't familiar with a lot of the ways that life insurance can be used in their financial plan, but also really kind of discounting the value that women bring into, let's say, a married relationship, the value that they bring if their income wasn't available and the need for life insurance with women as well.
All very true and points, and I'm glad you brought those up, Pam. I don't think that you know, but there was a time when I got out of working in advertising and marketing, I decided that I needed to go into sales. And I made a mistake, so to speak, because I picked a tough sales area to go into, and that was life insurance. But the reason I got into it was that Metropolitan, which was the company that I worked for, was trying to recruit in the mid-'80s. They were trying to recruit women sales agents basically because they were starting to realize that women were so underrepresented. I mean, I remember when I was a child, my dad telling me that women didn't need to have life insurance. So, so I don't know how long it took from those 50s when my dad was telling me that until the 80s when, you know, I guess that was 30 years. But even so, by the 80s when I was working for Metropolitan, it was still very common that when I went out and talked to couples and families about their financial planning and their life insurance situations, that I would generally find someone telling me that you know, if the wife had life insurance, they would say, well, she has, you know, $5,000 policy or something like that, which I don't even think you can bury a person for $5,000 anymore, but that's, you know, part of that's inflation. So
exactly, and the scary thing about that, Ann, is that a lot has not changed in that instance. I mean, I sit down with couples, and it's the same thing. If there's a stay-at-home mom that's at home with children or raised children, it's fairly still the same thing. Either, you know, A, they don't need the life insurance because they're really underestimating the economic values that a stay-at-home mom would, or they have smaller policies. I mean, the statistics that I just read to you were actually this, you know, 2012, which is last year's numbers. So I don't think really a lot has changed in terms of, you know, where we're getting policies at least, but in terms of the value that that is placed on having life insurance for women. I think a lot of that is still a little bit in the dark ages, so to speak, when it comes to speaking with couples, especially what I get is, oh, they're a stay-at-home mom, you know, I'm the breadwinner, so if something happens, then, you know, I will be okay, so I don't really need her policy. But like I said, a lot, you know, far too many families really underestimate the economic value of a person who stays at home. You know, there's, if you have younger children, there's child care, you know, there's driving around, there's a lot of different things that you can place value on in order to determine, you know, some life insurance needs from there. And on the flip side of that, 27% of women are now breadwinners in their own households. So millions of families are relying solely on a male's life insurance policy, but really failing to recognize that the finances would be, you know, devastating without the woman's income because she's the primary breadwinner. So, you know, there's still a lot to bring to the table in terms of equality in terms of life insurance policies.
I totally agree with that. One thing I've noticed in the last few years is the number of life insurance companies and even some casualty companies that also have started selling life insurance, the number of solicitations that I get in the mail from these companies, which never used to happen. But what I've did some research on it in getting ready for our call tonight, and I've discovered that the life insurance companies have discovered what they call the senior life insurance market. And that's why if any of our listeners are like me and getting these mailings from – there are some big companies that are doing these mailings. I think not that I get from everybody every month, but I think I can recall getting stuff from Prudential, Transamerica, ING, American General, Physicians Mutual, I think, sends me something every month, and then New York Life. But then there's others like Mutual of Omaha and Bankers Life and Casualty. And even I've discovered lately that my casualty company, my State Farm agent, is trying to sell me life insurance these days. So it seems like whether or not women are actually buying life insurance as much as they should be covered, it seems to me that the insurance marketing divisions have figured out that they should be talking to us. And so I think that's one of the reasons that I really wanted to do this call, is because I know that, you know, a lot of times when you have an agent come to your house, people can feel pressured by the fact, you know, these people are trying to sell me something. And I thought that perhaps you and I here, since neither of us are selling into life insurance, that we could, uncover some of the purposes for why women should have life insurance and get some of these questions answered so that people can be much better informed consumers. So I guess having said that, let's get to that first question that you started talking about a few minutes ago, which is, who needs life insurance?
Well, that's always the question, the number one question. A lot of times when I meet with people, they're like, oh, you know, I'm single, I don't need life insurance, or I'm this, I don't need life insurance. Who needs life insurance is anyone who will suffer financially if, in the absence of, if you die, chances are you're going to need some type of life insurance policy. It provides that cash value to the family. Unfortunately, after you pass away, the cash, being known as a death benefit, will replace basically the income and help the family meet the important needs like the funeral costs and the daily living expenses, or if you still have children at home, the college funding. In the absence of you not being there, those things still need to be funded. So that's where life insurance comes into play in terms of a replacement of income if you're not there. So, you know, most Americans will need some type of life insurance. You know, mm-hmm. So you have to kind of equate that with, if I'm not here, what still needs to get done? You still need to educate kids. My wife or my husband still need to have their daily living expenses. Somebody has to, you know, pay to, you know, for your funeral costs. Like you had mentioned before, $5,000 is really low. The average these days is somewhere between $10,000 and $15,000, depending on, how elaborate you want it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're probably looking somewhere in the neighborhood of, with the average, about $12,000, for that. And then you have to, mm-hmm. to account for those other things that I had mentioned. So, you know, in terms of who needs life insurance, always ask the question to yourself, if somebody's going to suffer financially when I die, I need to make sure that they are protected. It's called what I call the Life Insurance Foundation, and I'll give that website a little bit later on in our phone call, called the Insure Your Love, because you're not here. Mm-hmm. You don't want to leave somebody with these burdens of, I didn't have enough to cover the funeral. I don't have enough to meet the daily living needs for myself or my kids or the rest of my family. I don't have enough to send my kids to college if you still had college-age kids at home. So you don't want to be in that position where all of a sudden, you know, something happens and then it's not there. So mm-hmm. you make sure that, you know, that you do really understand that there is some type of need for life insurance, and always ask yourself the question, is somebody going to suffer financially if I die? And then really having mm-hmm. that conversation on getting a life insurance policy in place for that.
All right. So given that understanding, let's discuss a little bit more on the general topic of the importance of life insurance. You've talked mm-hmm. about the one key question is, who would suffer if you were to die? But there's probably more that we need to look at in terms of the importance of life insurance than that important question.
Yeah, exactly. Now, as I mentioned before in the beginning of our phone call, life insurance is one of those essential parts of financial planning. It's one of the primary cornerstones, and we've talked about some other ones in previous phone calls, but it's creating provisions for your family and loved ones in the event following your death. So it gives you some type of financial security to those who mean the most to you, either it be a spouse, children, even dependent parents. You know, we had talked about in a couple phone calls back, taking care of dependent parents. So mm-hmm. really carefully executing a life insurance policy can really help prepare for some of those life uncertainties and give peace of mind knowing that the future of those who rely on you is secure in your absence. Now, the importance of a life insurance policy helps pay for those immediate expenses because bills start accumulating very, very fast in the event of a death. You know, if we've ever dealt with a death of a loved one or a parent, we know those bills do not stop coming in. So life insurance can be used to pay for some of those immediate expenses, such as the funeral service or any unsettled hospital and medical bills. The mortgage payment still needs to be made. Any business commitments, if you have your own business, or meeting those college expenses for children that we talked about. So, you know, there's an important need there for those immediate expenses. And then the importance of life insurance as a cash resource, really giving access to cash to pay for, like I mentioned before, those daily living expenses, paying for grocery bills, helping also to secure your estate by, you know, life insurance, a lot of people don't know, provides a tax-free cash to pay estate or other obligations if you have to pay estate taxes. So you get that taken care of as well. And then really your family standard of living, to maintain your family, standard of living for your family. You know, with the right life insurance coverage, you know, your family's lifestyle and standard of living can be sustained, you know, with adding much more, you know, during that difficult time. You know, you don't want to put your loved ones and family in a situation where they don't have the resources to do X, Y, Z because there wasn't enough life insurance or there wasn't any life insurance. And so you went from one standard of living all the way down to half next to nothing because that income is lost from not having you there. So that is really the importance of having the life insurance, is to pay those immediate expenses, making sure your family maintains their standard of living, and, you know, really just making sure you have a really good policy in place to cover those particular needs for your family.
Mm-hmm. Now, those are, you've mentioned a number of different needs that come into play that are reasons why life insurance is an important part of our estate. But how do you help people that you work with? How do you help them to identify what their need is?
Yes, I mean, that's a very, very good question, because a lot of times people pull a number out of the thin air. Oh, I need, you know, 200, or I need 500, or I need a million, or I'm going to need whatever. Mm-hmm. And so people really don't give any thought, but they kind of take the basics in terms of this is how much I'm going to need to, you know, replace my income or send the kids to college and things like that, but don't really account for inflation, because over the years, you know, your money can get eaten up if you don't do that as well. So there's a couple of different ways to really assess a life insurance need, and I always go through these two ways to do it with people who I sit down with. One is called a human life value. So what that is basically if you had lived and you'd lived to be, let's say you had a premature death and you still had, let's say, 15 or 20 years before retirement, basically you're looking at what your human life value is. So if you're making $100,000 and you're bringing it into the household between now and when you would have retired and that $100,000 would have went away, then basically that's what you're doing. You're basically taking that $100,000 times the 15 or the 20 years you would have made that income, and then that's what you're coming up with as a kind of a number, a ballpark number of how much life insurance you would need. Now, I know that's a lot of money for a lot of people, because that's somewhere between, you know, $1.5 and $2 million worth of life insurance.
Right.
But what you're looking at is, you know, covering a spouse who, if you're not there any longer, has to sustain a 30-year retirement. We always talk about, you know, the 30-year retirement. And then also if you had a premature death, you still have to send maybe several kids to college. So once you start breaking down all of these numbers, that $1.5 to $2 million doesn't really seem like a whole lot of money. Once you start figuring out, I need to pay for this, I need to pay for this, I need to pay for that. So really looking at the human life value, what you're looking at is current and future financial obligations, and then minus any existing resources. So if you had any savings, earnings, investments, things like that you already own, then that will equal your life insurance need. So you have that human life value that we just talked about, coming up with a ballpark number of kind of the income replacement. If I'm not here and I would have lived through a retirement cycle for another 10, 15 years or whatever, then you come up with a number there based on salary. And then you come up with what we call a just kind of a needs-based analysis. I need this, you know, that's where that budget comes into play in terms of knowing what you need on a monthly basis. So what you need to run your household, what's it going to cost to send the kids to college, and then coming up with kind of a needs-based type situation. But generally, human life value is, I would probably say, a little bit more accurate number, because then that way you're looking at capitalizing those needs, you know, doing what they call human life value is also called capital needs analysis. So you're looking at historically more of a kind of a current and future financial obligations together. So you're not missing anything. Because a lot of times, like I said, when I sit down with people, they'll pull a number out of the sky. That could just be, I need this, I need this, I need this, but not really taking the broader picture, looking at the broader picture of what's going to happen in the future, what am I going to need. Because you want to make sure, especially with insurability issues, that, you know, you try to get it right on the first cut, because who knows if, you know, if you don't get enough life insurance, you know, now 4 years down the road, you say, oh, I messed up this calculation, I need more. At that point, you're 4 years older, and it's going to cost you a little bit more, but also you may become uninsurable, you know, you've had an issue where, you know, things happen in your situation that life insurance companies aren't willing to take the risk on you. So, you know, doing the needs analysis for life insurance is really a crucial point when you start looking at how much life insurance you need. You want to try to get as much as you can originally. And then you can always, you know, it's just like anything, you can always go down. It's kind of hard to go up in terms of life insurance. So, you know, if you need to scale it down a little bit later in life because you don't have some of the obligations, the children, and you retired and things like that, you can always scale it down, but it's really hard to scale it up when you're doing the life insurance need. So really, how much to identify your needs, again, really just to kind of recap, the human life value / capital needs analysis, really looking at current and future financial obligations, minus any existing resources. So if you have a, you know, 401k or investments and things like that that you already own, and then that will be basically your life insurance need when you start looking at and shopping around for life insurance policy.
Okay. Well, using the word is eluding me, but using the human life value and the needs-based analysis, and the fact that you've, you know, really stressed something that I think is hugely important, which is that it's very hard to guarantee that you'll be able to get more as you get older. You know, things can happen that suddenly make you uninsurable, and that could, you know, be a real surprise. So if you're talking to someone who's not at our age, you know, who's not already in this age, what do you tell them when they ask you how much is enough?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, a lot of times when I throw out those larger numbers, people, you know, their eyes start to either glaze over, or they're like, you know, oh, that's, you know, that's way too much. And then we kind of, you know, basically kind of scale back if that's too much. But originally we go at a capital needs analysis to figure out what that number is. I call it kind of a goalpost type situation. So we go kind of like the capital needs analysis, that's kind of the far end of the one end of the goalpost, and then kind of your basic needs on the other. And then somewhere in the middle will, you know, be how much is going to be enough for you. You know, if you don't want the kind of pie in the sky, what you need, And then, of course, you don't want to go all the way low. You want somewhere that's comfortable in between. Now, what I get a lot of times is with the how much is enough question, and sometimes with that larger number, especially if I have couples, you know, I don't know if it's a trust issue or whatever, but some people feel uncomfortable having large amounts of life insurance, like their spouses are going to kick them off or something. I don't know. But,
right.
You know, it becomes an issue when you start talking about over $1 million policies. I mean, I get that, you know, that question a lot, and I see people kind of are uneasy with certain amounts of life insurance. That's why I say, you know, this is kind of what you need in terms of what we came up with your capital needs analysis. But if you're not comfortable with that, how much is going to be enough for you to basically cover the things you want, the future obligations, and feel comfortable with the life insurance amount? You know, even though your capital needs analysis says you're on the higher end of that and you need it, sometimes you know how much is enough for them is a comfortability factor as well. So I want to make sure they have enough, but they're comfortable with the life insurance amount that they have. And that's going to be affordable. You have to make sure things are going to be affordable as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I think that for those people who are listening on the call and are still employed, a lot of them would be able to say that they've also got some coverage through their employer. So we should probably talk. I'm sure that when you're working with any of your clients, one of the things that you ask them is, are they using their employee life insurance benefits? So I'm sure that some of them might not even know they have employee life insurance benefits. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, it's really the life insurance benefit through your employer. And most of the time that I sit down with people, that's the only life insurance they have. They don't have anything outside of work.
Okay.
So the amount that's given to employees of companies are generally one time the salary of the employee. So if your salary is $100,000, usually your life insurance would be somewhere $100,000, which is up to the nearest thousand. So if you're at 150, it may go up to 160 or something like that. I mean, there's 10,000. So when you're 150, it may go up to, you know, anywhere between 160 and 170, somewhere in that neighborhood. So a lot of times when people come to me, that's the only source of life insurance. And I always say, are you utilizing, if you need additional life insurance, the easiest way, because life insurance through employers are what we call group policies, it's a lot easier to get additional coverage for, you know, cents on the dollar versus going out and buying an additional life insurance policy. So I always ask, you know, are you utilizing all of the life insurance benefits that you have? Because a lot of times they'll let you do, besides the one time that's generally given to you, they'll let you do, you know, two times, three times, four times your salary before you have to start going through underwriting, underwriting policies. So, you know, I always make sure they get the maximum there before they go outside, you know, if they to make it a little bit more affordable. I always encourage people to get something outside because if your life insurance is tied with your employer and you leave or you become self-employed, then you don't have any life insurance. So really making sure
exactly
you have some type of policy outside of your employer is a good thing to have. But if you're going to be, if you are employed and you do need additional life insurance, you know, try to do the maximum that you can. Because like I said, there's cents on the dollar, and then you can always match the difference. So if you can get the maximum through work, let's say $500,000, and you need $1 million life insurance policy, you can have that there, the $500,000 term there with group, and then you can go out and you can look at another $500,000 life insurance instead of going out and buying $1 million policy outside of work. So sometimes it's an affordability type issue, but really making sure you maximize the employee life insurance benefits. Now, the thing about life insurance benefits through your employer, I just want to go through a lot of it with people because sometimes people aren't aware of it. But the premium cost for the first $50,000 of life insurance coverage provided under your employer provide a group term life insurance is not reported as income and is not taxed to you. But anything in excess of $50,000 that is paid for you by your employer will trigger a taxable income for the economic value of coverage that is provided to you. A lot of times people are unaware of that. So let's say you have a $100,000 policy, the first $50,000 is not taxable income, and then you get that other $50,000, and if it's, you know, you have to determine whether the premiums were either pre-tax or after-tax dollars that you're using to pay. If it's basically an employer-paid pre-tax dollar situation, then it may show up somewhere as taxable income. Okay, so the tax, the taxation on life insurance policy, you know, really depends on several factors. Like I said, whether you're paid your life insurance premiums with pre- or post-tax dollars. So if you buy life insurance on your own or through your employer, your premiums are probably going to be after-tax dollars. So you may not, you know, have to pay the taxes on that. But, you know, there's different rules that apply with companies that offer the option to purchase life insurance also through, you know, qualified retirement plans or pre-tax contributions. You know, that's a whole, you know, a different conversation. But just know during with the life insurance policy, determine if it's pre- or post-tax dollars that's being paid, because that extra benefit over that $50,000 may be a taxable income, and it may show up somewhere as in your W-2 that you get at the end of the year. You may see something called difference of life insurance or something like that. That income may be a taxable income to you. So just be aware, if you're going to maximize the employee life insurance benefits, you know how much is going to be, if your employer are covering a certain part and who's paying the premiums, because you could put yourself in a little bit taxable situation getting additional life insurance through your employer.
Very good point. And that one that I think is very often discussed when you're talking to your HR department. they probably would talk about it if you bring it up, but I'm not sure that it's.
It's one of those things, you know, with HR, they give you a packet of stuff, and then, you know, you have to figure it out on your own. So it's best if you can, if you have an advisor, consult your advisor, you know, to look at your benefits, each open enrollment that you have, if you're, still working and you're employed, each open enrollment, it's probably best to, if you have an advisor, run a lot of this information through them to make sure you're getting the best health insurance coverage, the best life insurance coverage, what you're putting into your 401k, all of those type of benefits, because it's kind of a one-off at, when it comes to these open enrollment periods. They give you, you know, a month, and then they give you a packet of stuff, and you got to work your way through it, and you elect some stuff, and then if you don't like it, you're just kind of stuck with it for a year. So really make sure you go through it, you have somebody look at it, if you have an advisor, to really just, you know, make your elections the way you think you would like to have them, run them by some, by your advisor, and then say, you know, am I going in the right direction? If not, you know, they'll kind of correct it and figure out, you know, you should have done this, you should have done that, why did you do this, did you take advantage of maybe the healthcare savings account, some other things. So really looking at the employee benefits that you have through your work, not only the life insurance, but as a package, make sure you're making the best choices that you can during open enrollment.
All right. Okay, so we've talked pretty well there, I think, pretty well covered employee life insurance, which you made clear to say early on, that's group life insurance. And so as it's a group policy, it comes at probably a lower rate than if you're going to go and self-insure yourself. And then if you're going to buy insurance on your own, we've all heard of whole life insurance and term life, although I remember that the first time any agent started talking to me about whole life and term life, I had no idea what they were talking about. And of course, by the time I was selling life insurance, then they came out with this new thing called universal life, and since then they've come out with a number of other permutations. So I think that one important thing that we should try to talk about here tonight, Pam, is what type of life insurance is best, and maybe we need to explain a little bit about the differences between some of the different ones, which, you know, I'm sure you'll explain as you try to explain which one might be best for us.
Exactly. And, you know, best is always a term that, you know, each one has their benefits. So I wouldn't say mm-hmm. a best. What is best for
right.
somebody may not be best for someone else.
Exactly.
But in terms of the types of life insurance, because like you said, you know, if you're not in the industry, a lot of this can just be Greek for you in terms of, you know, what's available and what's out there because
mm-hmm.
there's so much. And like you said, over the years, you know, life insurance industry always evolves into different things. But the basics, just to kind of go over the basics, you'll have term insurance, which is, you know, stands for temporary type insurance, or permanent, and then permanent comes in a variety of different flavors, and we'll talk about those in a minute. But term insurance is kind of the most affordable type of insurance. When you initially purchase, it's designed to meet, you know, a temporary need. That's why it's called term. So it provides protection for a specific period of time, what we call the term, to generally pay for the benefits only if you die during that particular term. So, you know, they come in 10, 15, 20. There are some 30-year policies that are out there, but generally you're buying a temporary policy. So if you say between now and when I retire or when the kids are out or whatever the case may be, you buy a 20-year term policy, you'll buy that coverage. So if you die in that period of time, the life insurance pays out. If you die after the term, basically, the term is up, either you renew, which would be at a higher rate at that point because you're 20 years older, or you basically just let the policy go and you don't have that insurance anymore. So this type of insurance often makes sense, you know, when you have a need for coverage that will disappear after a certain period of time. Like I said, if you're you have, you know, young kids or you have kids and now they're grown and you didn't need that much life insurance anymore, you can let that temporary insurance go. Or you have, you know, the mortgage or something like that. So, you know, if you decide only needs coverage until that, you know, child graduates from college or you pay off a particular debt, such as your mortgage, then a temporary insurance policy, you know, may be a better situation for you. Now, permanent insurance, on contrast to that, provides that lifelong protection. As long as you're paying those premiums and you don't have any loans, and we'll talk briefly about loans, withdrawals or surrenders, then that full face amount or death benefit is paid to you. Because permanent is designed to last a long lifetime, it has that accumulation of cash value that is priced inside for you to keep that policy over the long period of time. Just to step back, temporary insurance is just pure benefit only. It doesn't have any cash value built into it. So the premiums that you're paying are for pure coverage. When you buy a permanent insurance policy like a whole life or a universal life or a variable universal life policy, those, basically the premium that you're paying, a portion of it is going towards the premium, the cost of the benefit to insure you, but then that other piece of the premium is going into a cash a bucket, so to speak, to accumulate cash value. That's how mm-hmm. the permanent policy is able to sustain itself because it has a period of time where it's growing and you don't have to, you know, pay the premiums of the whole while. Now, with the whole life policy, as a permanent insurance policy, it's just as it is. You basically pay the premiums your whole life. And then at the age of 100, it endows, and then you get the death benefit. And you're like, congratulations to you, you're 100, here's your policy.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
With some of the other policies, if you remember, if you were going as a life insurance agent, a lot of people were, you know, pricing themselves out with these premiums with the whole life. So they were, policies were lapsing, cashed in, whatever the case may be. So they came up with a variety of different insurance products that was able to sustain itself just a little bit on the cash value. At some point, you could stop paying those premiums and then have it the premiums being paid with some of the cash value inside. And those are some of those universal life and variable universal life policies that are available to you. Now, it really just kind of depends on you know, having that lifelong protection or basically having that term policy to cover a specific period of time. Permanent insurance is a little more costly in terms of premium because, like I said, a portion is going to the premium to insure you, but also a portion is going to that cash value that is investing on the side for that. So really it's kind of impossible to say which type is better, like I said, because the kind of coverage that's right depends on each person's unique situation and their financial goal. But generally, a combination of term and permanent insurance is usually the right solution that I recommend for people. If you can do kind of a combo, we'll get, you know, as much term as we can, and then we'll get, you know, if you have a $500,000 policy that you need to do, maybe you want to do $300,000 of term and $200,000 of permanent to make it a little more palatable in terms of the premiums. So a combination is the right solution. But the website that I was talking about before is called lifehappens.org. That's the Life Foundation, and they are the foundation that came up with the Life Insurance Awareness Month, really to get a chance to teach people a little bit about what's going on with life insurance and how it's ran and things like that. So to learn about term and permanent insurance and really the pros and cons of each, I would probably suggest you know, callers go to lifehappens.org. It walks you through a whole list of questions to consider to decide what kind of life insurance is really right for you. You know, but the best way to really figure out the amount and the type of life insurance that makes the best sense for you is really to meet with a qualified life professional, you know, life insurance agent, or probably, you know, one of the best people to kind of customize a policy for you. Because a lot of times, you know, you'll get, you know, the e-quotes or things like that online because you think you know what you want, but sometimes it's best to speak with a qualified insurance professional to have a policy customized just for you, for your particular situation and your financial goals, and not just kind of get a one-size-fits-all type policy with some of the calculators that you can that you use online. But, you know, lifehappens.org will kind of give you a good starting point to kind of go through the learn more about the term and the permanent insurance and then the pros and cons of each and then really how to determine which is right and best for you.
Excellent. Now, earlier when you were talking about some people get nervous when they when you talk to them about a $1 million policy because they're maybe worried that their spouse is going to do them in or something in order to collect on the insurance, which I know we were joking about, but I think we've all seen enough movies about that that we probably do think about it. But you know, that spouse was only going to get the insurance if they were the beneficiary. So choosing your life insurance beneficiary is a really important thing, the beneficiary being the person who receives the money upon your death. So let's talk a little bit about the beneficiary and why and how we should go about choosing who that beneficiary is. And it might not necessarily be a person.
Yeah, it may not necessarily be a person. You know, choosing the beneficiary is a careful process. You know, choosing a beneficiary is really the kind of the cleanest and clearest way to leave money to somebody after you're gone. But the process really requires some consideration, both, of course, in the amount of money that's at stake, and then also the beneficiary's ability to handle a potential windfall. Because if you pass on and then all of a sudden there's a $2 million policy there, is this beneficiary going to be able to execute what you want to happen? Or are they going to run away with $2 million? You just
right.
never know. So upon starting a life insurance policy, you must, you know, you will be asked to designate a beneficiary. And like I said, really decide carefully some of the considerations, you know, in advance. So naming a beneficiary to a policy means that it will bypass probate, which is a lengthy and complicated legal process, so really making sure you have the beneficiary on there. But what you want to do is really imagine the world after you're gone. You know, I always, when I sit down with people, it's like, you know, if I'm talking to a couple, I'm basically saying, okay, you know, Sam, you're not here anymore, and I want to hear from you. You're dead. I want to hear from this person.
Right.
And what they want to see happen, because, you know, that, and then vice versa. Okay, Sam, what would you like to see if, you know, life after you're gone situation? So really thinking about the beneficiary, you want to ask yourself some really big questions about the future without you. For example, will children need money to pay for college? Will parents need help pay medical bills? Do you did you consider children or your grandchildren? Or, you know, do you have a favorite charity? Do you want to leave money to charity? So really choosing a beneficiary, you know, it's a little bit of a family affair, you know. A beneficiary is usually maybe a spouse, a child, or a relative or a friend. But, you know, sometimes you may want to spread it around. So you can also have more than one beneficiary depending on the amount of money and your personal circumstances of those in your life. So you may want to name a secondary or a contingent beneficiary, you know, reducing the chances of prospective beneficiaries pre-deceased situation. So you want to make sure you kind of name a primary, secondary, and a contingent beneficiaries and things like that. As I mentioned before, there's no tax. Life insurance death benefits pass on tax-free of federal income. But it is basically added to your estate, though. You don't pay any taxes on it, but it's added to your estate. So you had mentioned who can own your policy as well. You may want to consider setting up a trust to own your life insurance policy if you have estate issues. The trust will remove some of the, you know, those burdens of disposing the assets if you're gone, and moving them into a more palatable type situation and into a trust. Looking at designating a trustee or custodian, especially if they're single parents with younger kids. You want to set up, you know, if their children are under 18, you really want to make sure you consider setting up a trust that will allow the stagger of certain assets to flow to them so the beneficiary can't spend it all unwisely all at once. So, like I said, with most people, if you have younger children, and a lot of times people will be single, and then they'll just say, okay, I want my kid to get the money. You don't want a 13-year-old to get a $2 million life insurance policy, you know. So those are, and then it depends on what state, because a lot of states won't, you know, accept minors as a beneficiary anyway. But in that particular instance, you would probably want to set up a trust. So you, so the life insurance will own the trust. You're the designated trustee or custodian. You appoint somebody there so they can see the flow of assets. So when the child is 18, when the child is 21, when the child is 30, however you want to outline it, you know, they will get money at certain points so they won't get it all at once and spend it unwisely. Also, you know, for the protection in the trust, if you put a life insurance in trust, it's for protection. You know, the beneficiary may have debts. Things like that. A trust can help protect your assets from creditors. So putting the life insurance inside of a trust, if the beneficiary has debts or things like that, will protect those assets from being taken by creditors. So really looking at, you know, some of the beneficiary situations, really looking at choosing wisely on that and setting up either a trust or, you know, depending on which beneficiaries you want to have that. Now, trust can be tax advantaged, so there's irrevocable trust or revocable trust, depending on how you want to set those up. But basically, you can name a person as a beneficiary, you can name a trust as a beneficiary. What you don't want to do when you're choosing a beneficiary or a trustee is that you don't want to choose the wrong trustee. You know, this is the point of time where you're putting into choosing your beneficiary. You don't want to introduce anybody that's irresponsible. This person's going to be in charge of administering assets to a trust, to your beneficiaries or whatever, to ensure the wishes you want carried out. So that's why I said it in the beginning of that, our conversation about this, is that, you know, all of a sudden there's a potential windfall. Is this person responsible? or not. You don't want to choose the wrong trustee to the trust. And then also, you know, be mindful of playing favorites. You know, if you're leaving money to one child, could create discord after children are gone. You know, I've seen it time again is that, you know, so it was actually a situation a few years back when I met with someone. And, you know, she was telling me about her sister and how she wasn't speaking to her sister anymore, and they'd become estranged. And I said, what happened? And she's like, well, my mother had left my oldest sister the life insurance policy, and she ran off with the money. And she didn't distribute the money equally among the children like it was supposed to do, like the mother thought it was going to happen. So really making sure, you know, that I hear all kinds of these bad stories. If you favor one child as the sole beneficiary with the intention of that person distributing the money equally, you know, human nature kind of takes advantage sometimes,
right,
and that person could do the wrong thing. So really be mindful of playing favorites when you're choosing a beneficiary and making sure you do it right and you do it correctly and you get somebody that's responsible.
Excellent. Now, as we've had this discussion, we've talked about the importance of having life insurance, and we've talked about the importance of having it in order to look at, you know, who would need some financial benefit after our death. So I think that the next question that I'm going to ask you has to do with, you know, as time goes on, which you started to talk about a little bit in this last answer. But let's talk a little bit about, you know, that maybe we first buy our life insurance when we're young because we want to protect our children. But, you know, now our children are, you know, perhaps by the time us boomers are sitting on this call, you know, maybe our kids are grown and have their own children. So the needs are not the same as they were when we first bought the policy. So we need to assess periodically what our coverage is and is it the proper coverage. So let's talk a little bit about how often and when do you recommend that we reassess our life insurance coverage?
Well, you know, buying life insurance policy, if it's done wisely, really should be a task that's undertaken about once or twice in your life, and then you can adjust policies. That's why I said when you do it initially, you want to try to get as much as you can, but you can always work down, but you can't work up. So really adjusting your policy is a duty that you really must perform regularly, especially if you have life change events. So if you add on children or you go through a divorce or you do things like that, you really want to make sure you kind of start looking at any policy adjustments, you know, from there. And make sure, you know, they're wise coverage adjustments. You want to outline when to, you know, reassess your life insurance policy. Some mistakes to avoid, as I stated earlier, life insurance is really something that you should purchase once in your life. And it's like I said, if it's done right and customized right to you, you can always basically, you know, downsize into a right, you know, to basically like you buy a house. You bought the big one, and then now you're downsizing. Same thing with life insurance policies. So often, you know, people make mistakes of buying a policy, realizing that they're going to need more coverage, like I mentioned earlier in this call. And then you buy another policy a few years down the road. I see so many people with so many just little pieces of term policies, you know, five or six of them just out there. and they have these policies because they're like, okay, I have this one, but then I needed an additional 100, so I went and bought another one. And this can be a really expensive mistake, especially if you're dealing with, you know, permanent life insurance policies, to have multiple policies. So, you know, if you don't understand life insurance, buying multiple policies throughout your lifetime should, you know, it should be something that you should avoid. Now, we talked a little bit about life insurance agents. You know, some of them aren't always on the up and up. Sometimes, I'm just saying. And so sometimes it's a common practice, you know, for some agents to say, okay, you need more. They'll put you into the, you know, latest, greatest policy, maybe a little bit more expensive type thing. So, you know, be aware of, you know, as you make an adjustment, life insurance trying to push something on you that may be a little more expensive because they'll get a big commission. You know, you'll lose some of the cash value based on that. So you don't want to fall prey to some of these scams that are out there. So having a really qualified life insurance professional that you trust that will be able to kind of do this for you is the key. So really planning ahead. Life insurance policies are really easily constructed to fit your needs. But, you know, you really must allow the adjustment amounts to adjust the coverage amounts as you foresee your needs in the future. So if you buy a permanent life insurance policy and you foresee marriage or a new house or kids in your future, you want to make sure you have the option to increase or decrease coverage at cost. So, you know, if you have one policy, can I, you know, increase it a little bit or buy extra, what do we call, add-ons or add-ins, or decrease the coverage at cost because my life situation has changed. You want to make sure you make adjustments there. Otherwise, you'll run the risk of getting too much or too little or having a policy that becomes too expensive for your budget needs. So if your policy can accommodate your change in coverage needs, you won't be forced to cancel or lose your money to a policy that you invested because you got the wrong one. So really trying to find an option that's able to increase and decrease coverage costs on there. The necessity for insurance companies to cover modification is smaller than if you go out and purchase a whole new policy. That's why I say I see a lot of times people figure they need an additional life insurance policy. The first thing that they do is really try to go out and buy another life insurance policy. I have $100,000 a year. I need $500,000. Maybe I'll go buy $250,000 or buy. So, you know, they'll usually end up with a lot of life insurance policies. So when to adjust. When you want to adjust is, like I said, if you have any life changes. So if you buy a new car or you add addition to the family, if you get a new job or, you know, things like that, you may want to periodically increase your coverage and take a look at that. A lot of times what I find the biggest mistake is that people bought a policy younger in their lives and they had a certain lifestyle or house or mortgage, and then they didn't account for, now I've upgraded to a bigger house, or, you know, is my family still going to be able to live in this house if something happened to me? So really making sure your policy is adjustable to cover the increase in the mortgage now that your house is worth more and you don't have the small apartment or townhouse that you bought when you were younger. So then also later on in life, you want to look at taking an assessment or adjustment after you've retired or you've seen your last child graduate. You may not need as much life insurance coverage because you have fewer financial obligations. So there may be some options to actually decrease coverage. So you may not need a $1 million policy. Maybe now you only need five. So really looking at making adjustments and doing that. So each life stage that you go through, if you and make any changes to life events, adding new kids, changing jobs, upgrading your house, things like that, you want to take an assessment. You don't want, you know, in unfortunate times, you really don't want to start, you know, up way too much on your life insurance because a lot of times it becomes a point where you're not able to afford the policy and canceling the policy. You want to look at options that you're able to reduce premium costs rather than I can't afford it anymore and canceling the policy. Mm-hmm. So if it's done right and customized, like I said initially, is that, you know, if you get something that is scalable for up or down and things like that, and you work with a really good life insurance professional, you should be able to customize it and make adjustments and reassessments as you go along throughout your lifetime.
All right. Would you say that this is something that we should have an annual audit or review, or are there more milestones that we should be looking at?
You always want to do an annual audit when you buy life insurance. You know, and most of the time people think it's kind of that one life insurance test is complete once you bought that policy and then you're done with it. So you don't want to let your life insurance policy run on autopilot. You really, like I said before, it's a key cornerstone to your financial plan and one of the essential pieces to your whole financial puzzle. So you want to do it just like you do with your financial plan annually. Take a look at it, you know, as circumstances and needs change, do your periodic monitoring like I just mentioned. So if you retire or the last child graduates or things like that, those are your periodic monitoring. But on an annual basis, as part of your overall financial plan review, you just want to take an assessment on where the life insurance is at that point. So you basically go, is my coverage up to date? You know, you want to start considering your original reasons for purchasing the policy. Are they still applicable? And then evaluating any additional needs that you want to put on there. Like I said, the most of the time is when you were married and you had a modest home. You know, now you have multiple kids and now you have a higher mortgage. That's the one I see a lot of times, is that people don't add on those additional life needs to help cover a larger mortgage or pay college expenses for multiple children or contribute to family future. They just kind of let their insurance run on autopilot and haven't taken a reassessment of it. That's why it's always good to take an annual assessment. And like I mentioned before, because it's Life Insurance Awareness Month next month, that's usually the time to really kind of get it in your mindset of maybe I need to take an assessment of doing my life insurance audit during, you know, during September, you know, to take a look at it. Also, the one that I see a lot is have my beneficiaries changed. The most common one that I always have to explain to people is that, you know, ex-spouses are still beneficiaries on policies. I see it a lot.
Right.
You know, the worst thing in the world is if you had something happen to you and your current family is not getting anything, but your ex is getting the life insurance policy. You don't want that to happen. You know, that,
no, that is not a good thing.
Not a good thing. That can cause a big risk.
Right.
You don't want that. So really making sure, you know, I think I mentioned on a previous phone call before, doing a beneficiary audit is the same thing with your life insurance, your annuities, IRAs. You want to periodically get in there and say, you know, are my beneficiaries up to date? Do I need to make any changes? Now I'm divorced, or now I have another child. Maybe I want to put them on as a contingent beneficiary, things like that. And then also, has my estate grown? You know, so estate conservation strategies, if you have life insurance and the death proceeds are included in your estate, now that your asset base increased, you may want to periodically monitor the life insurance situation from an estate conservation strategy to help minimize the effect on your overall estate taxation. So really, you know, life insurance always plays a significant role in your family's finances. So treat it as such, as your overall financial plan. It's that one cornerstone in there called risk management, which is the insurances. You want to take a look at them periodically, evaluate your present situation, and then really determine the appropriate course of action as you go along. But, you know, that's one of those cornerstones a lot of times people kind of glance over. I mean, people know it's important, but they don't dig in there like they do, you know, IRAs and some of the other assets. And I think it's one of those kind of neglected type of financial tools that is underutilized because it has a lot of power if it's used properly and appropriately.
Mm-hmm. Well, very good. I've got a few questions that I'd like to cover, but I recognize that we're at the top of the hour here, so we have covered our basic questions here in our primary amount of time, and you've given us some really wonderful information. But I'd like to open the call up at this point and find out if there are any of our listeners who have a question that they'd like to ask you. And as I said, I've had a few questions that have come in through the form, so I can get to those if people are being shy and if there aren't people here who would like to speak up. I have opened the call so anybody can talk. So if anyone's out there who has a question, here's your time to ask a question. Okay, well, either it's just you and me talking or else they're being shy. So let me ask you one of the questions that I have that came in through the form is that we have Jan from Iowa who wants to know about charitable giving. She wants to know how we can use life insurance to fund charitable giving program.
That's a very good question, Jan. It really depends on how you set it up in terms of your beneficiary. It's the charitable, if the charity is going to be the sole beneficiary of the proceeds for the life insurance, you'll probably want to set up different types of trusts. One is called right up hand. It's called I think it's a CRAT or CRUST. It's a charitable remainder trust. which is called, I think it's a CRAT. It's a variety of different ones. Then you have other irrevocable life insurance trusts, which are ILIFs. They can also be used for those type of charities. So if you are specifically giving the life insurance policy, putting it in a trust, and then it being used for charitable giving, there's a variety of different types of trusts that you want to use for those particular life insurance policies. But the one right offhand is called a charitable remainder trust that you may want to take a look at if you're into the charitable giving.
Okay, excellent. Now I've got Tracy from Oklahoma wants to know, is there a way that we can pay off our, well, I think what she's saying is that you've talked about that we can use part of our proceeds to pay off auto loans or credit cards or mortgages after we're dead, but is there a way that we could possibly pay some of these costs or to help us cover the costs of medical expenses while we're still alive, like expenses like in-home care or nursing care?
Mm-hmm. Okay. If you're doing those particular expenses, there's, like I said, the life insurance industry is always evolving. So they have what we call hybrid policies that are out there now. They're basically term policies with what they call living benefits that are attached to them. So they operate a little bit of like permanent insurances as a cash value amount. Now, it will decrease the death benefit amount if you do use it during that time, but it can be used for if you got sick, or you can use it for long-term care needs. If you get cancer or, you know, some terminally ill disease and you need to access your life insurance policy, those types of policies are ways to do it. They're called term policies with living benefits. That's a kind of a new type of policy that's available now. I was just on a phone call the other day about several companies that are really into getting some really good policies with those particular term life insurance with living benefits in them. But they are term policies, but they behave a little bit like permanent policies in the event that you experience severe illnesses, cancers, things like that, long-term care needs as well.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to look those up, it's a hybrid policy, but it's called term life policy with living benefits.
Okay. Anybody else out there who has a question for Pam? Don't be shy. Okay, well, Pam, there's something that I'd like to talk to you about that you and I discussed earlier this week.
Yes.
And that was when I was starting to do research on life insurance to find out what had happened new since 30 years ago when I sold it. I discovered that there's another concept for life insurance, which involves using the proceeds while we're still alive, like that other question that you just answered,
mm-hmm.
but using it to fund our retirement. Apparently, I think this is a bit controversial, this method, but I've read that there's actually financial institutions like big companies like Credit Suisse and large investors
mm-hmm.
like Warren Buffett that are involved in this concept. And basically what these organizations and investors are doing are spending billions of dollars to buy life insurance policies that are owned by older adults. Or other investors
mm-hmm.
are paying, actually going out and paying people our age to apply for huge life insurance policies, in some cases even lending them the money to buy the policies. But then they're, in a way, capitalizing on this because they're
mm-hmm.
reselling the policies to speculators. And the concept is apparently that the investors buy up the policies and then they pay out part of the value to the insured in advance. So that's the part
mm-hmm.
that you would live on. You know, maybe you buy a $7 million policy and they give you
mm-hmm.
upfront $1 million that you can use to live on because maybe things happened and you find yourself in a situation where you don't have any savings and you're looking ahead
mm-hmm.
to, you know, how am I going to support myself in my retirement years where I could be living 30 years before from retirement to death. So they're having these payouts that allow them to pay to live on the payout, and then the investors are the people who collect the full value of the policy when the insured dies. And mm-hmm. I don't think that you had heard that much about this before I started talking
no.
to you about it.
No.
You have
no,
any questions for us about it.
But I did
something that,
take a look. Yeah, I did take a look at that article after you had sent it to me, and it's very, very, very interesting. And it's a lot of it, the insurance companies, not the investment side of it. But really, you know, that's not what life insurance was meant to be. You know,
right.
Like you said, it would turn this whole thing on its head if, you know, it continues down the road it's continuing to go. But it's similar to, settlement type company. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
if you get an annuity type situation and you want to sell your proceeds back and then get the money and then invest it. So it's a similar concept that has been used in other types of industries. So a person needs a stream of income, and so they would sell their settlement or their
mm-hmm.
annuity or something back so they can get the proceeds. So I could see a lot of that happening with, like you said, some of those wealthier life insurance policies where, you know, they would need the retirement income in order to pay it personally, because in my opinion, I don't think it's very ethical, but
well,
it just seems
I agree
wrong.
That it doesn't sound ethical to me. It seems wrong. And I'm sure that the insurance companies are aware of it and trying to find a way to make sure it doesn't continue to happen. But still, I really thought that once I discovered about it, that I thought our discussion of life insurance wouldn't be complete if we didn't talk about
it.
Yeah,
we didn't talk about it. I mean, let's just hope, you know, it's a short-lived type situation, but doesn't become the norm as boomers continue to age and we need
mm-hmm.
resources in order to pay for retirement, that this is not going to become one of those particular situations of a way to find additional retirement income. Let's just hope not.
mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thanks for discussing that. And I'm just in case any of our listeners had heard about this and were curious about it. I question the ethics of it, but it's still out there, so I really thought we needed to discuss it. And before I close the call, I'm going to have one more time. I'm going to say, anybody who's listening out there who's got a question, this is your last chance to ask a question. All right. Well, I think we must have satisfied everybody's basic questions about
mm-hmm.
Life insurance. Pam, it was a great call. I really thank you, as usual, for the wonderful amount of information that you provided. You were always a great guest, and this was excellent discussion here on life insurance. So I want to thank you very much for your
thank
time
you.
Here. Well, you are welcome. And I want to thank all of our listeners, even though they didn't ask us questions. There are too many. I did get the couple that came in through the computer. But again, it was a great call here with Pamela Sams. And if you have questions after the call, feel free to email them to Pam at pamela@jacksonsams.com. That's JACKSONSAMS.com. And if you'd like to know more about the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, you can find us in a number of places online, including our website, which is www.nabbw.com. We have a forum at boomerwomenspeak.com and a Facebook page, which is easy to find because it's facebook.com/NABBW. So Pam or I, we're always happy to hear from the people who are listening to our calls and
mm-hmm.
always anxious to talk about financial topics that we haven't covered yet that you have questions about. So don't hesitate to send us an email if you've got a question. And meanwhile, beyond that, I'm just going to say thank you, Pamela, and everyone on the call for joining us this evening, and good night.
Good night.